Hello, podcast, my old friend. I've come to shout in your ear again. Ooh, that was very good. Took myself by surprise. Hey, guys, how are you all doing? My name is Perry, and welcome to another episode of Hello, Mr. Burns, a research podcast where I talk about old school Simpsons episodes and how watching these episodes might make you sound smarter.
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
I hope you brought your scuba gear today because this episode is a deep dive of Season 1, Episode 5, Bart the General.
Butt kisser.
Bart, you're saying butt kisser like it's a bad thing.
As always, we'll be starting with a super duper quick episode synopsis. We'll list out some new and notable characters, and then we're going to get straight into some good old research and did you knows. So today's episode is a deep dive of the 5th episode ever aired, and funnily enough, it's one of the more controversial episodes of the early years of The Simpsons. On a commentary track, Matt Groening mentions that it always surprised him how controversial this episode was when it first aired. And to be fair, I get what he's saying because if you really squint your brain, this episode is all about war, bullying, and has a lot of references to some quite gory topics.
Won't somebody please think of the children?
Alrighty, Vegemitey, here's the episode synopsis. Bart gets into a fight with Nelson Muntz after one of Nelson's friends stomp on a box of cupcakes that Lisa baked for Miss Hoover's birthday party. Nelson ends up beating up Bart after school, and he drops this iconic line that you might recognize from Dodgeball.
You made me bleed my own blood.
Marge encourages Bart to reason with Nelson, but Homer encourages him to man up and fight dirty. Bart decides to follow Homer's advice, and he gets drop-kicked the next day at school. He decides to turn to the toughest member of the Simpsons family, Grandpa Simpson. Grandpa takes him to Herman's Military Antiques, an army surplus store run by a one-armed nutjob named Herman. Herman teaches Bart all about military tactics, and Bart declares war on Nelson. Bart enlists the help of his friends and classmates, and he begins training them for combat. They ambush Nelson and his gang of bum chums and saturation bomb them with water bombs. Nelson's thugs surrender, and Nelson is taken prisoner. Herman drafts up an agreement which states that Nelson will retain his honorary position and title of schoolyard bully, but not hold any actual power. After everyone signs the treaty, Marge serves cupcakes and peace prevails. The end. So the first appearances in this episode. This episode we get to meet two recurring characters for the very first time. The first one is Nelson Muntz, schoolyard bully, and this is his only appearance for the entirety of season one. The second is a less recurring character of Herman. So Herman is that one-armed creepy guy who owns the military surplus store. Anyway, let's start having a look at what we can learn from this episode, because this is a good one. So this is season one, episode 5, Bart the General. Let's do a deep dive.
Play friendly, children.
All right, so I'm in a good mood today. So I'm going to say let's start with the character of Herman, because he's a lot of fun.
Mr. Herman?
Yes?
Did you lose your arm in the war?
My arm? Well, let me put it this way. Next time your teacher tells you to keep your arm inside the bus window, you do it.
Yes, sir.
He doesn't pop up much in The Simpsons. He's kind of like one of those earlier characters that never really hit it off. Except he does have a brief appearance in the Simpsons clip show, where he reenacts the scene from Pulp Fiction.
Hold it right there. Looks like the spider got himself a couple of flies.
Herman does say in this episode that he lost his arm when he stuck it out of the window of a moving bus when he was a kid. You might remember, my dear podcast friends, that in Homer's Odyssey, Mrs. Krabappel did mention a kid losing his arm this way, so maybe she's talking about Herman. We never actually find out. In the Czech dub of this episode, due to a liberal translation, I'm doing air quotes, Herman is more like a Nazi character. He greets Bart in this scene by saying Sieg Heil, and then tells him to never do the Nazi salute out of a moving bus's window. I did briefly explore losing limbs out of car windows, and can tell you it's a thing. I will not traumatize you with some of the statistics in the stories, but I will enlighten you with this little factorino. A really common injury that occurs in traffic is when someone has their arm, usually their elbow, resting on the window of the car and someone comes past and sideswipes them. This is such a common injury that there's like a medical classification for it, and it has its own official name. It's called traffic elbow. The term was coined after an intense study conducted in India, examining 34 patients with varying levels of traffic elbow. Of those 34 patients, Only 10 fully recovered. The rest of them faced amputation, permanent nerve damage, and 4 of those people spent the rest of their lives with one arm shorter than the other. Aw, like Nemo.
How many men do you have?
None.
You'll need more.
As I said, this episode is just pitter-puppin' with war references and war movie throwbacks and quotes and everything. For example, the marching chant is similar to the chant in the 1949 war film Battleground. There are also several lines lifted directly from the 1970 film Patton, including this. Have a listen to this.
What's the matter with you, soldier?
It's my nerves, sir. I just can't stand the barking anymore.
Your nerves? Oh! I won't have cowards in my army. Ow!
Sorry, Bart. You can push them out of a plane. You can march them off a cliff. You can send them off to die on some godforsaken rock. But for some reason, you can't slap them.
So this is actually a reference to a real-life General George S. Patton, where reportedly he slapped a soldier who was dealing with PTSD during World War II. Because of this, Patton was subsequently required to publicly apologize and was removed from the front lines as a result. The same historical events were dramatized in Patton, the 1970 film. Isn't it weird to think that in war, like they said in The Simpsons, you can't hit a soldier, you can't even physically assault them, but you can push them out into the front line to get shot. In The Simpsons episode, the marching sequence is a nod to Stanley Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket. It's a 1987 film. Coincidentally, I ended up watching Full Metal Jacket during my hotel quarantine, and I'll tell you that it surprised me in a number of ways. So for me, all of these war films tend to blur into one. I've got Saving Private Ryan right there at the top of my list. It's closely followed by 1917, Jarhead, and then Dunkirk, just because I like seeing Harry Styles. As far as non-serious war films, I gotta say Tropic Thunder trumps them all.
Now, let's go get those Viet Congs.
Viet Cong!
What?
It's Viet Cong. There's no S. It's already plural. You wouldn't say Chinese's.
So Kubrick's Full Metal Jacket is all about the Vietnam War. No spoilers. It's a story that covers the soldiers' training under the ruthless command of this guy called Sergeant Hartman, and it's kind of where a few of the recruits face mental breakdowns, and then after some wacky events, the soldiers are left to deal with the war's hellish mayhem on their own. It's also where we get this iconically racist line.
Yes. Wow, baby, me so horny. Me so horny.
You keep lying.
Me love you long time.
My favorite parody of this is seen in South Park when Cartman suffers amnesia and thinks he's a Vietnamese prostitute.
Hello, hello, P. Hello, P. Hello, soldier boy. Hey, soldier boy.
Huh?
Hello, soldier boy. Me so horny. Me love you long time.
Go away, kid. You're grossing me out.
It's also in Baby Got Back by Sir Mix-a-Lot, which is my go-to karaoke song.
My whole boy's trying to warn me, but that butt you got makes
me so horny.
In the movie Full Metal Jacket, the actor who plays Hartman was a real-life drill sergeant turned actor. He was in Apocalypse Now, if you've seen that. He was actually brought onto Full Metal Jacket as a technical advisor, but after Kubrick saw his military insults, he decided to cast him in the movie. And honestly, listen to how good his insults are. Just remember that these are all improvised. Here, listen to this clip.
Sir! Sir, what? Are you about to call me an asshole?
Sir, no, sir!
How tall are you, Private?
Sir, 5'9", sir!
5'9"? I didn't know they stacked shit that high. You trying to squeeze an inch in on me somewhere, huh?
Sir, no, sir!
Bullshit, it looks to me like the best part of you ran down the crack of your mama's ass and ended up as a brown stain on the mattress.
Do you suck dicks?
Sir, no, sir!
Are you a Peter Pepper?
Sir, no, sir!
I'll bet you're the kind of guy that would fuck a person in the ass and not even have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reach around. You're so ugly you could be a modern art masterpiece. Do you suck dicks?
Sir, no, sir!
Bullshit, I'll bet you could suck a golf ball through a garden hose.
Sir, no,
how cool is that? I mean, it's obviously homophobic, problematic, and it's illegal for military personnel to speak to someone else like that. That's bullying, but God damn, he's good. You'd want him in a schoolyard fight. So the name of the movie, Full Metal Jacket, is referencing a type of bullet, which is also called a Full Metal Jacket bullet, or FMJ. The FMJ was created in 1882 by Swiss Colonel Edward Rubin, and it's basically a bullet that consists of a soft core, usually lead, and it's encased in a shell of harder metal, sometimes gilding metal, copper nickel, or less commonly, steel alloy. So before the FMJ bullet was invented, everybody used something called a hollow point bullet. So these nasty little bullets had a hollow tip or like a small pit at the top of the bullet, It's often filled with lead, and this bullet would basically expand on impact, also known as mushrooming. So this mushroomed bullet would basically bounce around inside your body, tearing up your insides. Hollow points also had the added destruction of disintegrating on impact. So not only would you be dealing with severe internal damage, a huge open wound, lots of shattered bones and torn up flesh, you'd also get small flecks of metal and lead just settling right in your body. These bullets were also called dum-dums, so that's named after an early British example that was produced in the dum-dum arsenal near Calcutta. I got stuck at Dum-Dum Airport overnight once because I missed a flight, and I spent the whole time giggling at the name. So cute. So these hollow point bullets were declared as being inhumane due to the just extensive damage they caused to the body. The Hague Convention of 1899 ruled that hollow point or expanding bullets were completely prohibited in international war, just because they were so brutal and resulted in a painful death. Since this rule, these bullets have never been used in any war, apart from that one time that Germany was a little bit cheeky and used them, but they got in big trouble for that. They are still used the world over by hunters and in self-defense, the logic stating that both situations call for a certain kill shot. FMJ bullets, on the other hand, go straight through the body without exploding. They don't bounce around or catch on bones. They just kind of punch through, leaving you with a through-and-through wound. An FMJ won't kill someone instantly like a hollow point, but it'll wound. That, unless you get shot in the head or like a major organ. So this actually got me thinking. In war, when you're shooting at an enemy, I'd always assumed that it was shoot to kill. Therefore, wouldn't a hollow point bullet be the way to go? You know, the purpose of shooting an enemy is to take them down, not to just wound them, right? Well, as always, the army has a pretty clear answer on this. If you've ever played Civ 6 or Age of Empires, you will know that war is always won by the side who has the most resources. So on a battlefield, if a soldier is shot with a hollow point, they'll most likely die. That is one less soldier out of action. But if they're shot with a full metal jacket, they're wounded, but they're not necessarily dead. Because of this, the soldier is attended to by medics, and then the army needs to expend resources caring and healing the soldier. They are pumping resources into medical retrieval and transportation. It's a lot of resources spent on one soldier. It's more advantageous resource-wise to wound an enemy rather than kill. FMJ bullets are also ironically considered a more humane bullet in war, and both sides of the Vietnam War agreed to use them. An added problem with these bullets is that in the field, it creates situations like what Kubrick's movie shows. So in this film, a sniper continuously tortures a downed man and thereby draws out his buddies into open field to murderous effect. It's the same thing in Saving Private Ryan with that scene with Vin Diesel and the piano, that scene. When one soldier is wounded, often other soldiers will run out of cover to try and save him, and then they're also taken out. We also see this in Full Metal Jacket the movie when Rathman brings down a small girl soldier. She doesn't die right away and Joker has to finish her off. It's pretty brutal. This is actually the turning point in the film where you see Joker gain what he calls the 1,000-yard stare. Another thing to note about the pure shitstorm that was the Vietnam War, the M16 guns that were used were a kind of new type of technology for war. So this gun used a small, faster form of FMJ bullets. So they don't mushroom like prohibited bullets, but they do bounce around violently, so they also leave horrible wounds. Researcher Clark Walker notes that another bitter irony of Vietnam was that these M16 guns were a shitty gun for the jungle. So it was designed as a cheaper knockoff of an AR-15. That's a more reliable gun often used in war. The large corporation that made the M16s configured it with a cheaper barrel, and the FMJ bullets really weren't compatible with this type of weapon. These guns got dirtier faster, and it was said that many a grunt was found dead in the field with the cleaning rod in his barrel trying to unjam the gun in the heat of the firefight. Although this is strongly denied by a few military personnel. It's also said that these types of guns were referred to as Mattel guns because, you know, it was kind of like they were made by Mattel, the toy company. All right, let's jump back into The Simpsons and lighten things up a little bit and talk about some good old-fashioned curse words. So when we first meet Grandpa Simpson, he is angrily writing this letter.
Dear advertisers, I am disgusted with the way old people are depicted on television. We are not all vibrant, fun-loving sex maniacs. Many of us are bitter, resentful individuals who remember the good old days when entertainment was bland and inoffensive. The following is a list of words I never want to hear on television again. Number one, bra. Number two, horny. Number three, family jewels.
Hi, Grandpa.
This episode had a lot of problems with the censors at the time, not because of the war references, but because they wanted to cut out the phrase family jewels. The writers completely ignored this, and subsequently, family jewels is said about 3 times during this episode. I thought we'd also quickly touch on a scene at the end of the episode. So when Bart and his army defeat Nelson and all the kids are celebrating, one of the kids is dressed as a sailor and he rushes forward, grabs Lisa, and kisses her in a similar fashion to the sailor in the famous photograph VJ Day in Times Square. VJ. So this photo, I guarantee you guys would know what I'm talking about if you saw it. It's that famous image of a US Navy sailor kissing a total stranger on the day that it was announced victory over Japan. That's what the VJ stands for. Victory Japan Day. Hee hee, VJ. A lot of people have claimed to be the couple in the photo, although it's commonly accepted that the woman in the photo is a woman named Greta Zimmer Friedman. She was a dental assistant who said that she was in no shape or form wanting the kiss. In a 2005 interview with the Library of Congress, Friedman said, "It wasn't my choice to be kissed. The guy just came over and grabbed. That man was very strong. I wasn't kissing him. He was kissing me. I did not see him approaching, and before I knew it, I was in his tight grip." In The Simpsons, we see Lisa slap the kid and tell him to knock it off. In later episodes, she does say that Nelson was her first kiss, so clearly this one doesn't count. And with that big smooch, we come to the end of another episode of Hello, Mr. Burns, and our examination of Bart the General. The next episode that I'm going to be tackling is episode 6, and oh, for the love of God, I hate the name of this episode. I don't know why it makes me feel so uncomfortable. It's just, okay, so the next episode, season 1, episode 6, is called Moaning Lisa. Ugh. It's a great episode, like, it's wonderful, you're going to really enjoy this one, I just hate the name. Ugh. Anyway, so as I was saying, my name is Perry, thank you so much for listening, and as always, keep watching the skis!